Excuse me. I'd like to call to order this hearing, the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Wednesday, February 18th. The first bill on our agenda is Senate File 102, Senator Bonhoff. Welcome to the committee, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Senator Vest.
Senator Bonhoff, do you have any amendments?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have two amendments. I have an
Pollack,
A2.
Are they in the folders?
The A2 is in the folders.
The A2 is in the folder. Is this your first stop?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka, on behalf of Senator Bonhoff, offers the A2 amendment.
Yes, I do.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there a second amendment, Senator Bonhoff?
There is, Madam Chair, and I thought we might want to have the discussion about the bill and then offer the second amendment.
Of course. Whatever you like, we will treat it, however, as an author's amendment.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. So, Madam Chair, members.
So we do have the delete everything amendment, the A2 amendment, now before us in place of the original bill. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill addresses the issue that we heard a great deal about last session when the fourth tier tax rate was enacted. What I heard most as I spoke to people in my community and heard from constituents is that the fourth tier increased rate really put some great pressure on our small businesses, that they felt as though they were now paying tax rates that were, in fact, higher than the regular corporate rates. And so this bill affects that. The owner's personal income, different than their business income, was being taxed at the higher rate, as was their business income. So the amendment mirrors an amendment that went on in the House, which clarifies the definition of active trade or business income that includes the share of income or loss as defined by the IRS. And members, the amendment that that is before you would say that, in fact, the LLCs, the S-Corps, that those businesses would be at the previous top-tier rate. The amendment that I have not yet put before you, but do have ready to put before you, says that we would only do that for the S-Corps. And the reason for having that discussion on the table today is because as I looked at the fiscal note, really I would have preferred to do all three as a matter of good tax policy and what I was hearing from my communities. But as I looked at the fiscal impact of doing that, it seemed as though it might not be the best use of our money. And so as we talk about being concerned about small businesses in particular, I asked council and fiscal staff to investigate what it would be to just make this change for the S-Corps. And so the second amendment that I have before you makes that change, and there is a revised fiscal note that reflects that.
So Senator Bonhoff and the Tax Committee, we call them revenue estimates.
Thank you.
Fiscal notes.
Okay.
But I would direct members' attention to the revenue estimate that is drawn to the A2 amendment, which shows with all of the pass-through entities included, which is what we have before us right this second, a revenue impact FY 2016 of $172 million. And I think it's interesting that we do look at that impact to know where that rate increase actually fell or fall. I don't know if it fell the hardest, but it falls hard.
Yes.
And I don't recall at this point what the total impact was in the 2013 bill of raising the rate. Ms. Pollack, can you give us an indication of what that might have been, so that or Ms. McQuay, and if not this second, if you could look it up so that we can see what $172 million is as a percentage of that, at least relatively speaking, of that total amount.
Madam Chair, yes, we'll get that in just a moment.
Okay. So there, that's what we have.
Yes.
Ms. McQuay, do you have an answer for us, or do we need to wait?
Madam Chair, members, the revenue raised by enacting the fourth tier at 9.85% in the first fiscal year, which was 2004, fiscal year 2004 for tax year 2014 for 2013 was 592.5, and then in the second year 526.4, and then 16 554.3, and then 590.3 in fiscal year 17.
So the 172, just these are just really rough numbers. 172 out of 550 is approximately
20%. What?
30-some percent.
Madam Chair, I was going to go with a third.
Before using
my calculator.
30% of that fell on business entities organized in the ways in which you have it here.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's really interesting, because we talked about it as being a tax on, our people, not businesses. But we heard the outcry from businesses, and so when you see it in that perspective, you can certainly understand why the business community did respond so strongly to the change.
I don't know whether we have a new tax expenditure estimate, however, but currently, what do we know what that tax is raising? Do we know that from the forecast? And the reason why I ask that is that we did hear, obviously, Senator Bonoff, you and I and others at this table, that this would drive a lot of people out of Minnesota. I think the evidence is that it really didn't. That doesn't mean that it's not an issue. But I don't believe we saw a huge drop in the but maybe we did, so we should know that. In the revenue collections, based on the increase in the tax, for whatever reason, it might well be that people in the economic recovery just earned more money or made more money, rather than reflecting a migratory process, if you will. But do we know that, Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair and members, and maybe Mr. Cummings can add to this, but we wouldn't separate out in the forecast what those revenues, where those revenues came from. The department is in the process of preparing the next tax incidence analysis. Although I'm not, and this is where Mr. Cummings could add something as to what year tax year that we'll pull from, and that may provide some insight into this.
So, Senator Bonoff, I think that means that we are free to make whatever surmises we would like. So you just go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, if you remember the last forecast that came out, given the forecast had the new fourth tier in its modeling, they did find that there was a surplus even beyond what was modeled in the income tax. The greatest difference was from the Health and Human Services side, but there was even higher collections than had been predicted in the fourth tier. And one of the things that I think is not often talked about is that the LLC component of this whole measure is those can be investment banking firms, they can be venture capital firms, they can be law firms, and so I think the amount of collections really can be quite robust in that category. I don't know that that was the intention when we did that, yeah. And the change that I'm proposing here still would keep that in effect, which is a value choice. Again, I would rather exempt them all, but I don't think as we look at what we can afford that probably, in my opinion, that that will happen this session.
So, Senator Bonhoff, that being said, are you ready?
I'm off, I am ready to offer the A3.
Senator Gazelka, on behalf of Senator Bonhoff, offers the A3 amendment. It's an author's amendment. all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. I think maybe you didn't have exactly the language in front of you, but Senator Bonhoff had gone ahead and explained it, so we'll consider the adoption in order. And we do see now that by limiting it to a single type of business organization, that the S-corps are only approximately one-third of right. that total course total cost. Would you like to go more into why you chose that entity rather than the other entities, business forms that you had previously had in your
Yes, in your Madam bill. Chair, thank you. I will briefly, and then I know I do have many testifiers, but
yes.
When I heard the outcry against the fourth tier, the frame that I heard most often was, you are really hurting the engine of our economy. You are really hurting small business. And S Corp actually stands for small business, small corporations. And so given that I knew that LLCs and some of the other categories can be very, you know, lucrative, big entities, it seemed like it was more appropriate to start with the ones that people were the most concerned about. And so as I sat, you know, around, for example, Twin West is here today, as I sat around the legislative breakfast tables, that's what I was hearing about, were those small businesses. So I will say, though, that I have heard that it will be very difficult to separate them out. So I'm pleased that we were able to see a revenue estimate, because I was told that they filed using the same form. And so I'm not even sure how they were able to come up with this. I'm grateful that they were. I was afraid I would hear back, no, it can't be done.
Mm-hmm. I stand corrected, but it was my impression that the S-Corps is just a chapter in the Internal Revenue Code, Senator Bonhoff.
Versus that it stood for small corporations?
No, it's just Chapter S. Just
Madam
like
Chair,
Chapter C.
Madam Chair, that's what my expert told me.
Well, as I said, I'm willing to be corrected, but how inventive that must have been, as opposed to Chapter Q or something.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions of Senator Bonhoff before we move to her testifiers? Okie doke.
Okay, so I would call Steve, Mike, Beth, and Phil to the table. We can just gather around and...
Okay. Mr. Wise. Which ones did she mean?
There you go.
Mr. Jorgensen, Ms. Cadoon, and Mr. Weber, and you may speak in any order which you have decided. As long as you identify yourself as you begin your testimony, we're very happy to have you with us this morning, and thank you for being here.
I can go first. Madam Chair, members, my name is Steve Wise. I am president of Cass Screw Machine Products. We are an advanced manufacturer in Brooklyn Center, the southern part of Senator Eaton's district. I'm also past chair of the Twin West Chamber of Commerce and a member of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to bring a few trinkets and set them out on the corner. See the type of parts that we manufacture. We don't have a product of our own. We make parts for OEMs around the country like Toro, Bobcat, and Polaris. So I do not have the latitude of when I am setting prices to just raise my prices and the consumers can pick up the slack. These OEMs are savvy. They are relentless in their price cutting, and I don't get to raise prices on these people. Basically, I have to come back every year and ask them or show them the type of price decreases I can give them. We shouldn't be surprised that when Governor Dayton was running for office that he said he knew where the money was and he knew how to get it. And we also shouldn't be surprised that when this tax came into effect, when someone doesn't understand how pass-through income affects people, we shouldn't be surprised it should have unintended consequences. We are like many other S corporations. We have to pass through the income onto our individual tax forms. My wife and I both have good jobs, so that immediately means that anything that we pass through from the corporation gets taxed at the highest level. That high level is pretty easy math to do. Suppose I pass through $200,000 of income into my individual tax form. That's $4,000 that I would not have had to pay out without the higher tax bracket. That $4,000 is something that I could have plowed back into my business. That's about what I pay for insurance for one of my souls up there in Brooklyn Center. I have 125 people working for me. That $4,000, one of those small parts up there that I make a penny on, that's 400,000 extra pieces I would have to run to make that extra money up. While $4,000 doesn't sound like a ton of money to some corporations and to some people, it's another pile on. It's another death by a thousand cuts to the corporations in Minnesota. Another burden that we're just pushing back on. Something that we shouldn't have to endure. I respectfully ask that you consider an exemption for the S corporation members of the state. My customers won't let me raise prices, as I said. And just to understand, Minnesota got a grade of F for their business tax climate in a recent study for the Center of Business and Economic Research. And this top-tier pass-through business mechanism was one of the reasons why. So I'd ask that you please help our state stop being an outlier when it comes to tax climate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Any comments or questions for Mr. Wise? Mr. Jorgensen? Welcome to the
Good morning, Madam Chair, Tax Committee. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak with you this morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, if you'd identify yourself.
Okay. My name is Michael Jorgensen. I'm the president of Impressions Incorporated. We have two facilities in the state of Minnesota. Our headquarters are in St. Paul in the Westgate Park near the border of Minneapolis, and we have a second facility in Hutchinson, Minnesota. We employ roughly 280 employees between the two facilities, and our sales 2014 were roughly $42 million. Our business is folding cartons. I think, you know, people don't really understand what boxes are, so I brought some samples that some people may recognize. That's an audio book. This is a sock sleeve for a company out of Iowa, as well as a typical private label over-the-counter health and beauty aid product. Last time I was here, I spoke to the House Tax Committee on the particular bill, and not being real familiar with all the individual members, there were a lot of comments and questions directed at me, and one particular comment went on about manufacturing, in which the spokesperson was doing this type of a motion with his hand like he was twisting a wrench, and what I kind of gathered from what he was saying was that Minnesota doesn't want jobs that twist wrenches. We want better paying jobs, that there's a program that's trying to get people over and above that. Well, I don't really understand his intention, but I had to respond that, first of all, there's nothing wrong with people that twist wrenches for a living. Secondly, Impressions Incorporated doesn't do that kind of work. We're a part of a very elaborate global supply chain that involves sophisticated technology from elaborate computer information systems, networks, and highly engineered manufacturing equipment that produces product for companies much the same. Our product goes to companies that manufacture these products that wear hair nets and face masks. So you're dealing with lab technicians, chemists, engineers, all of that. And more over the last few years, we've seen our Fortune 500 companies here in Minnesota expand elsewhere, which is where we ship our product to their manufacturing locations out of state. Recognizable names, I won't go through them, but we do work with several Minnesota companies, but we're more and more are pursuing companies out of state. Our latest customer that we just negotiated through intense negotiation and price concessions was a company called Reckitt Benckiser. I don't know if any of you have heard of them. They're a $50 billion healthcare provider based in Berkshire, England. We're working with them through a company called Schiff, which is a Utah-based company that Reckitt acquired, through a company called Marlin Nutraceuticals out of Phoenix, Arizona, and the actual product brand will be Walgreens. So that's the kind of world we live in, and you try and figure out who exactly is the customer, but none of those companies have any Minnesota connection right now. They're all national companies, international companies, and more they choose to locate closer to markets, which give them access to global United States domestic markets as a whole. When Impressions Incorporated in 2000, the last election prior, I should say, in 2008, when the taxes were increased at a federal and state level, that put us above 50%. Impressions is an S corporation, so we're paying 50% out in taxes right now. At that point, Impressions deliberately got together with our group and said, where do we go now? We're in the same position as Steve. We can't raise our prices. We have tough negotiations. We compete against large companies, and we sell to large companies. We canceled sponsorships. We discontinued some of our promotional materials to gain new business. We canceled our wild tickets. You know, it doesn't seem like a big thing, but we did. Company picnics, company Christmas parties, we've cut back on those, eventually eliminating them. We've had to hold on salaries. We've had to hold on wage increases. And we've had to hold off on hiring. So these are all realities that a company like us has to face in a situation where we are held to pricing. The tax increases cannot be passed along. We have to absorb them. And as far as companies, you know, relocating to other states, I know Impressions has looked at expanding elsewhere. We have a building with a huge capital cost and still a fairly down market for real estate. You can't just sell your company and pack up and move tomorrow. It takes time. But from what we're experiencing and what we're hearing from our customers, there definitely is attention being paid to other states, other areas where they consider it more business friendly. So I think that's basically my main message. And please, if you feel free to ask me any questions or anything, I'd be more than happy to have you come to our facility. We're not far from here, or answer anything that I can do for you. Thank you again for your time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kozelka.
To the testifier, would you consider some of the key things that have caused you at least to look to some other states? In other words, what are some of the things we are doing at a government level that are making that a shift where people are starting to look other places?
Mr. Jorgensen,
tax increase? Is it Minsure? I mean, what are the things that, you know, I just want to know if there's some major issue that we need to address first, or if it's just a combination of things.
Well, Mr. Jorgensen.
Yes.
I just didn't need to call on you before you speak.
Okay.
It's because of the tape.
Whoever
is speaking, it's clear on the tape. So that's why we go through the chair.
That's a very good question, and a question that would take a long time to answer. But basically, the business climate does have an impact. We have to go where our customers are. Major trends in the consumer packaging market is what they call SKU proliferation, where there used to be one or two items that a brand would sell. Now there's dozens. They're introducing new products, they're limiting new products. With that means more products, smaller quantities. Order quantities get smaller, faster turn times. So companies are coalescing around areas where there's that unity. Now, I know that Minnesota's lost a lot of businesses through taxation through the years. We've seen a lot of movement out of this area. The whole story that happened back in 87 with the 3M Carlton Park was very complicated, but that essentially eliminated one of our largest divisions that we worked with when they moved that to Austin, Texas. That cost us millions at that point. So we've seen the movement to the south, to the southeast. We have several California companies, but they too are moving more towards the Midwest area, but certainly taxation. Minshew, I don't know. I mean, healthcare is in such transition right now that it's hard to say. You know, the regulatory environment, I could say, you know, workers' rights. There's just a lot of different things that come together. But from our standpoint, we do have to look at taxes. It is a significant cost to us and does put us at a competitive disadvantage.
Right. Thank you.
Any other comments? Or I'm going to have some after the gentleman finish testifying. Is it Mr. Weber? Mr. Weber, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for having us here today. My name is Phil Weber. I own and the proud owner of the Park Tavern in St. Louis Park for the last 45 years, and a new restaurant in Crystal by the name of Milton's, which we've had for 2 years. And we represent quite a cross-section of the S-Corp faces of the industry. We all have our own unique challenges. Taxes being the one that's commonly shared by everybody. I guess what I would like to do is just sort of point out for the hospitality industry, which I'm sure you're all aware of, some of the challenges we're facing right now. Taxation, obviously, is always a big one. But right now I'm faced, we had the minimum wage increase this year. That was $40,000 net off my bottom line. There's no way to recover that money. And again, as we've all talked about, price sensitivity. We have to be sensitive to the market. You can't charge more than the market will bear. It's just not there. As you've all probably graced the doors of West End. West End created 1,500 dining seats without creating 1,500 new people to fill those seats. So those people are coming from all over. So like Steve said, death by a thousand cuts. It's not any one thing that's majorly impactful. It's this slow whittling away at my industry. It's just so many people coming into the marketplace and so many national chains coming in. It's just... It's one of those things. I won't see the impact of this year dramatically, but every year going forward, this is a cumulative thing. It just builds and it builds and it builds. And our industry is amazingly healthy right now and busy. My personal business is down quite a bit from where it has been. And again, I can directly point to West End for that. Healthcare, which we all are aware of what's going on with healthcare, is another thing that I've always supplied healthcare for my staff. I've had it for 30 years, and right now I don't know what I'm going to do except have to drop everybody under 30 hours if I can do it to accommodate the new healthcare rules coming into 16. That's when it takes effect for me. So it's a lot of different things. I would never go anywhere. I'll do whatever I can to stay vibrant and healthy. I have four people working for me collecting Social Security that have worked for me long beyond their physical abilities and mostly their skill abilities, but they've been with me since the beginning. So mm-hmm. I need to keep these people with me. I need to carry them there till the end of their working days. And it's just, I will do anything I can. I've taken personally pay cuts, and I'm not complaining about it. I've been very fortunate. I've got a great business, but it's challenging, and it's all the little things again. Cumulatively will build over the years and will make small independents like myself eventually have to refocus, rechange, do something. But again, you have to do what you have to do to survive, and it's just the market again will only bear so much of price increases without having to do other things. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Mr. Weber, and I'd rather eat at Milton's than at West End, and I have. So
thank you.
We do appreciate your presence in one of my cities. before we go to more for professional lobbyists, I do want to express our appreciation to the three of you for being here. A couple of comments
all of us, I'm happy to say, refrained from interrupting you when you made reference to what we call the other body. And I don't think any of us go around waving our hands in the air, searching for a word to describe manufacturing businesses. But also, I think that there is a lot of controversy about and discussion about the business climate in Minnesota, and you can go to any number of reports and get very different conclusions. In the latter part of 2014, Forbes came out and said Minnesota overall is the 9th best state in the country with regard to its business climate. You can say it's the worst. We can find others who look at all kinds of factors and say and come up and say it's the 9th best. So we take those reports, whether they're favorable or unfavorable, quite frankly, and we should with a grain of salt. We need to look at specific policies that, even if we consider them to be good, can be improved. And I think Senator Bonhoff for highlighting this one tax issue for us in the bill that she brings to us today. We hope that business improves for every company in Minnesota, and I'm happy to see those that are, quite frankly, moving into my district, whether they are retail. We have a wonderful new grocery store complex moving into New Hope that is coming without the benefit of tax increment financing. They just think this is a great place to be, and we welcome Hy-Vee, which is going to be opening I guess, probably now the middle of the next year. But so there are ups and downs, and it really is a great place to live, to work, to, as Senator Bonhoff does within her committee, to do all kinds of things to improve the workforce and to make sure that companies that do locate here are confident in the level of a trained workforce that they encounter. It is, in my mind, besides location issues and goods to market and that sort of thing, it's probably the number one reason that anyone looking around the country chooses to locate in Minnesota, and that's a well-trained workforce, and Senator Bonhoff's committee has been outstanding in working with the business community and higher education community to make sure that we continue improvements in that regard. Someone else wanted to speak? Senator Scoy?
When you're done, Madam Chair.
I'm finished now. I was going on to the other.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question for Senator Bonhoff, and I think I'll ask it now, and perhaps Ms. Cadoon would have an opportunity to respond. But first, I want to congratulate you gentlemen on your profitable businesses, because you are successful and you do show a profit. And we know that because the income tax is a concern that you're bringing to us today. If you were not profitable, you wouldn't be concerned about it because it wouldn't be an impact on you. So congratulations. We also have concerns about the property taxes, and those are taxes that you pay whether you are showing a profit or not. And so we have to, in this committee, we balance all these things out. But I listen to you, and I think about the opportunity to reduce your tax burden through investment in your company. And the question for Senator Bonhoff is, I've talked to staff just a little bit, and I don't have an official revenue estimate on this, but it looks to me like we would be able to do 100% Section 179 conformity with the amount of money that's being proposed in this bill, which would be a benefit for those companies that are investing back into their company as opposed to giving tax relief to the owners. And I'm wondering if you would contemplate that as we go through the session as maybe an alternative to contemplate for the perhaps almost more of a benefit for the businesses, because you know they would be able to invest back in their companies, which would give them more strength into the future, because they would be improving their processes or their personnel or whatever processes for Section 179.
Senator Bonhoff, are you familiar? No, you're not. I knew that.
Oh,
Section 179. Senator Skoy, would you please explain what you're talking about?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Senator Bonhoff, federally, on an annual basis, the federal government has been allowing up to $250,000 of investment in the company to be deducted in 1 year.
Oh, depreciation.
Depreciation.
Yeah.
You can depreciate $250,000 in 1 year, and then there's a 50% add back for a bonus depreciation. But just the Section 179 component, Minnesota requires 80% of that to be added back. So it takes 5 years to get the same depreciation level in Minnesota. And so to benefit the businesses, we would conform with what the federal government is doing in giving them all of the depreciation in 1 year, which would be an incentive for businesses to be investing in themselves, because they would be improving their business but also reducing their tax burden. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts, you know, and I won't, you don't have to give me an answer today, but as we go forward, when we're contemplating what we do with regard to the limited resources we have, whether we would focus on property taxes or income taxes or perhaps these other issues that roll around. And
maybe. Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
And Senator Skoy, when I think of, and I wasn't familiar with this, so thank you for bringing it forward. When I think of depreciation, I think of goods. And so in order to get this, would it have to be that the business has invested in actual goods rather than their people?
It's like equipment that they purchase, or trucks or that kind of thing. It's not inventory as such, and it certainly is not wages.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator, so I'll talk to, you know, people that have come forward with a concern. My concern, just first hearing about it, is that so many of the S-Corps could be service providers, and so they may not have the same kind of need to purchase that kind of equipment where they could take advantage of that. But I'm open, and I'll ask around.
And Madam Chair,
as
we know, the feds have not made these permanent, so we would be kind of getting ahead of them. They tend to always do this in December, which is kind of a late date for any kind of incentive, but that tend to be what their mode of operation is. But it's just something that I was contemplating as I was listening to the testimony.
And just to add to that, I think one of the irritations that the states have that are high-conforming states to the federal code is that they have not made these changes permanent, and we rush to enact them so that people can make timely filings of their income tax returns for the year in which they were intended. And one of, I think, one not only for businesses but for individuals as well, one of the big annoyances is that you can't depend on these changes. They could decide not to do them. And maybe politically they feel the pressure, but certainly they could decide not to, and then plans that you had made, any of us had made, depending on them, just go out the window. And so we tend to hold back from making those plans, either investment or particular types of purchases, you know, even the things like teachers buying supplies for their students at schools. If they're not going to get that deduction, it may make them think twice.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelle, go.
Thank you. And I think, you know, that was maybe part of my question to Mr. Jorgensen, because we talked about the Section 179.
Right.
We've talked about these bills. We've had some conversation about business property tax, the inflator on that. And so there's, you know, I hope that we are able to do something, but I know that we're not going to be able to do everything. And so that's kind of why we're asking, what is it that would really you know, what would be the number one thing or the highest priority thing? And I'm sure there's winners and losers on every one of them, but that's why we're asking those questions.
Well, I think the operative word in one of the comments that Senator Scoy made is that we have limited resources. He didn't say we have no resources. And so it's going to be a matter, I think, whatever target the tax committee gets for a tax relief, it's going to be a matter of working together to act strategically and to have and define the maximum impact for the tax relief wherever we give it or propose to give it that we can. So with that, if there are no further questions for the three gentlemen, we'll ask the Ms. Cadoon to comment. And is Mr. Skillbred here? And then I believe that there are testifiers who are not on your side.
Madam Chair, I learned of that this
separately.
Morning. Yes.
Ms. Cadoon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of
Commerce.
Could
you pull the mic closer to you, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Senator Bonoff for bringing this bill forward and just have a few comments regarding pass-through entities and how important we think it is to see how we can improve our competitiveness in this area. Pass-through businesses are really a growing segment of our economy here in Minnesota and the business sectors. This is true not only in Minnesota but nationally as well. Pass-through entities make up about 92% of businesses in the state of Minnesota. They employ now the majority of the private sector is employed by pass-through entities. 56% are employed by pass-through entities in the state. And there, as I said, this is a growing segment, so you're seeing more and more entities that are formed this way and then employing more people. The majority of business income, my understanding, is now in the pass-through sector as well. Not to say that seed corporations are not still a very important segment of our business climate. They are. We're blessed to have so many here, and we think there's some improvements we can make there as well, but I just want to emphasize really the pass-through entities at this point. Minnesota has placed a really high tax burden on pass-through entities. We do have the fourth highest individual income tax rate in the nation. What that means is we have the fourth highest pass-through tax rate in the nation. We're just behind Hawaii, Oregon, and California at this point. Pass-through income, as you've heard, what that happens for these businesses is that they're taxed on their business profit. A lot of times it's called phantom income because they're taxed on the income that they roll back into their company. That's what they use to cash flow their business. That's what they use to invest in capital equipment and their employees. And so the more you tax that income, the less dollars they have to reinvest in their companies. And that was the testimony that I hopefully got across today from the gentleman that came forward. So our view is if you can reduce the tax burden on pass-through, it will really help their ability to reinvest back in their companies. What I mentioned on the amendment that went on, I think it's wonderful if we can get this S-Corp, so hopefully we can work with you as well as this bill moves forward into the full tax committee to see if we can get those other pass-through entities included as well. If you look at the revenue impact, the revenue estimate that was put forth, the original estimate had 33,000 business tax filers that would be receiving a tax reduction. The new estimate has 4,300. So you are greatly reducing the amount of business entities that now would be impacted by this, and we think it's important to get to these other entities as well. I'll mention just on the comment regarding kind of some other tax items that maybe could be in play. I think, unfortunately, we do have high taxes in other areas as well that impact businesses. The statewide business property tax was mentioned. Our business property taxes rank in the top five nationally, second highest in rural Minnesota on some types of properties. So there's opportunities to improve the competitiveness of that tax as well. There's also Section 179, Senator Scoy mentioned. I think that's another thing as we move forward in the federal government, especially if they act on that and make it permanent. I think that's something that Minnesota should conform to if we can. Realize as you're looking at that, I don't know the impact on these companies. It really depends on the thresholds that are used and which companies are impacted by that tax reduction. So it's going to help different entities. I think it's important to do that, and hopefully we can do as much as we can with the targets that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon, in particular for pointing out the difference in the number of returns that would be affected. So with 4,300 returns, which is maybe about 12% of the total amount of returns, actually do account for over one-third of the dollars collected. So it seems to me that that's a really interesting statistic, as opposed to choosing one of the other types of pass-through on income. I'm not exactly sure what to make of it, but like 12% of the income, 12% of the returns account for over one-third of the tax relief. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cadoon, I have a question about your comment with regard to investing in personnel. You said this is money that they would use to invest in people and other things. If they invest in hiring a new person, that's a direct expense. 100% of it reduces their tax burden. And if they buy a supply, that's a direct expense, 100% of which reduces their tax burden. The one area that they don't get 100% deductibility is on capital equipment, which is spread out over more periods of time. So I'm curious about your comment about this is money that they use for people, you know, that line. Could you explain that a little further to me?
I think it'd be real helpful to hear from an actual business owner on that one. Thank you.
Mr. Jorgensen.
Thank you very much. We just survived the worst
Mr. Jorgensen, you do need to address the chair before you respond to the question. Sorry.
We just survived the worst economic downturn in our lives. We had several customers go bankrupt. We had a substantial $10 million annual loss in sales. We showed a loss over a four-month period of $1.9 million. Having survived that, I have no immediate expectations that they may come back again. But that's the whole cash flow equation, is that we invest in capital equipment when we need capital equipment. We invest employees when we need employees. And that's all based on growth, you know, projected growth and actual growth. And as it is right now, we hold off until we're at that point that we are forced, you know, we have to make a decision, but we can never put ourselves in a position where we're vulnerable. So the money has to be there, liquid funds available in the event that we did have an economic downturn or a large customer could go away tomorrow. We've seen that where companies have discontinued products or moved. So it's just that, you know, when we have the money, it's there, and then we can make the decisions on what we decide to do. But it's not done in those cases to lower our costs. It's there in anticipated revenue growth.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also, my business is an S-stock corporation, and we've also been fortunate to have good years. But if we show a loss, income tax is not a factor. This is a pass-through for income tax. If your company's showing losses, this tax has no impact on you at all.
Mr. Jorgensen?
The tax doesn't have an impact. The tax has an impact
on
our...
Mr. Jorgensen, you need to say Madam Chair first.
I'm sorry.
And it's only because of the tape so that we know who is speaking. So
thank
you say Madam Chair, and then you speak.
Yes, thank you. The protocol is a little different than that other...
Yes, we have strict protocol here, or at least in the tax division and in the tax committee.
Okay, Madam Chair. I'm trying to recall exactly what the question is, but the profits go back into the company, and at that point, that gives you the ability to invest with lower finance charges. You know, if we're going to buy capital equipment, We can do it a number of ways. We can take out a loan. We can work out some type of a financial arrangement through the manufacturer. We can pay cash. We can pay a portion of it. But the money that does get taxed that we're talking about today is the money that we use to fund our business moving forward. So decisions are made, you know, based on your ability to be able to absorb these costs in the most effective way. If you don't have the cash flow to cover a potential downturn, you just aren't going to invest. And we're finding we are much more conservative now than we were in the past through the reasons I stated, is that we're in a very competitive pricing market. We know we have to add more customers to make up for lost business. It's just that churn happens all the time. And in order to do that, oftentimes the new customers, we are bidding work lower than what we had with our existing business. So, you know, it's a long story, and I think I've made my point, but thank you for raising the question. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments to these witnesses? Then we thank you very much for being with us this morning, and we will now call forward Ms. Schaubach, Ms. Madden, and Mr. Adams. Oh, and Mr. Skillbred, I'm sorry. Sorry, we'll take Mr. Skillbred first and then the other three that I just mentioned. Mr. Skillbred, welcome to the committee, and we're happy to have your comments as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Skillbred, and I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. We have about 300 community banks spread throughout Minnesota, rural, urban, metro areas. Their two biggest niches are ag lending and small business lending. The big banks don't want to bother with small businesses because it just takes too much time to do it over and over and over and over. But that's where our niche is. And on behalf of those customers, many of whom are pass-through businesses, and on behalf of many of our banks, which are S-Corps, we strongly support this bill and want to thank Senator Bonhoeffer for recognizing this and putting some light on it. Just a couple of comments, and one is we think this bill brings some fairness to our tax system. Right now, if you're a local hardware store owner, you're paying a higher tax rate than the big box company that you're competing with. Likewise, with our little banks, you might be a $19 million bank in Ceylon, Minnesota, but you're paying a bigger tax rate than Wells Fargo. Secondly, we move forward in what has been discussed as phantom income. And that's the income, of course, that is the business income that you have to add to the tax statement, and you get taxed on it, even if you reinvest it in your business. Thirdly, it was mentioned, too, how easy it is to get up into this fourth tier if you are a pass-through or a sub-S, and I just wanted to kind of lay that out. Someone mentioned it, but more specifically, if you're, let's say you're a couple and you own a business, now you add the income that you get from the business, and then you add the business income, and then like a lot of other farmers or other businesses, maybe one of the people in the couple have another job, they're a teacher or something like that. Then you add that income together. And when you do so, it's very easy to get into that fourth tier. Lastly, I wanted to say that someone mentioned that it's a death by a thousand cuts. There's a lot of other things taking place in addition to this. Sometimes it depends on your industry, but as you know, the federal tax, top tax tier rate went up in 2013. Ours went up 2013. In these little banks of ours, we have a huge amount of new regulatory costs as a result of federal action. And so it all kind of piles on and adds together as a problem. So we strongly support this bill. We think it's a good bill as far as adding some fairness into the tax policy and also positive for those small businesses to help them be stronger and to grow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Skillbred. Are there comments or questions for Mr. Skillbred? Seeing none, we thank you for your testimony. And now, Ms. Schalbach, Ms. Madden, Mr. Adams, if you'd come forward. Once again, you may decide among yourselves who will speak first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Madden, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. The Minnesota Budget Project is a research and advocacy organization that promotes public policies that expand opportunity and economic security to all Minnesotans. And I'm happy to have the opportunity to add some comments on this bill today and appreciate the kind of tax policy discussion that the committee is having. First of all, I'd like to appreciate that the cost of this bill as it has been amended has gone down. The original fiscal note on this bill would represent about a third of the surplus for the 16-17 biennium. I think as amended, it's about a 10% of the projected surplus, so I appreciate the bringing the cost down. I think it is still a question before you about whether a $100 million tax cut for a little over 4,000 households is the priority for use of the surplus over other choices that could have a broader impact across the state, including other kinds of investments in our workforce, but also over a more broadly based tax cut. I think another issue we wanted to kind of add to the mix was, as you're considering this bill and others like it, is that there is not a tax status for small businesses. That while we often use that shorthand, that businesses that pay taxes on their profits on the individual income tax are small businesses, it's not actually based on the size of the business. It's based on the structure, the business structure that the owners have chosen. So it is not necessarily correlated to the number of employees or the amount of revenues. So that the businesses that pay taxes on their profits through the individual income tax are not only the small family restaurant, the farms, the hardware stores, and the kind of testifiers that you've heard from today, but also include a number of professionals who tend to structure their businesses this way, doctors, lawyers, accountants. And some of these pass-through businesses are actually quite large businesses. So the scope of the businesses that pay their taxes this way is broader than represented by the testifiers that you've heard from today. I think another point we'd like to add is that only a small percentage of households who have this kind of pass-through income have incomes high enough to be in the fourth tier. And when we had this discussion in 2013, it was estimated that only about 6% of households with pass-through incomes had incomes high enough to be in the new fourth tier. So I think the choice is before you as you're thinking about if the intent is to provide a tax benefit to small businesses, that this universe is larger than that, and that the bill, as you have it right now, doesn't include some of the smallest businesses, the less profitable businesses, but it also may include some very large businesses as well. So making sure that the policy is targeted where you want it to land, I think, is important. Just one other,
No, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. One other just policy concern I wanted to raise is that I have some concern about the precedent of treating similar taxpayers differently because of what they do and setting up a precedent of creating a tax preference for income that is earned through business ownership compared to income earned through salaries and wages. And my understanding of how this bill would work is if you had a business where the owner works at the business but also has some high salary employees, that this tax benefit goes to the owner but not to the employees. So thinking through whether that's a precedent we want to set. And then finally, you know, also that this bill is targeted at the fourth tier. We are concerned that it may represent some backsliding on the progress we've made of making our tax system less regressive. Thank you.
Senator Bonoff, did you want to comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment for Ms. Madden. Thank you for your testimony. The more I looked into the underlying bill before we added the amendment, I too had that concern with regard to the types of entities that could file as LLCs. So you could have some very, very large corporations file as LLCs. From what I've found in my research, and I'm not an expert, but the S-Corp delineation does really change that. And so that is one of the reasons why I did choose to go that route.
Ms. Pollack, in a conversation that we had yesterday, we were making some inquiries as to how many shareholders by law are allowed for the various types of choices of business organization. And as I recall, you said that S-Corps may have as many as 100 shareholders, and I don't know if it's the major one or all have to be, or at least one have to be United States citizens. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, generally, and there's some difference in state laws, but it's 75 to 100 shareholders is the maximum. Okay. And yes, for S corporations, all of the shareholders must be U.S. citizens.
With regard to the other types of pass-through entities, are there similar, and I don't know the answer to this, are there similar restrictions on or qualifications or eligibility for who the shareholders or partners or whatever they call them have to be, and particularly with regard to citizenship?
Madam Chair, no. You may have an investor or a shareholder that's a foreign entity.
In all of the others?
In the others, yes.
Okay. I do think it's a question about separating the business organization decision, and I did note that once you made the A3 amendment, the revenue estimate says right there at the bottom, these estimates do not take into account behavioral changes that could result from the proposal, because, of course, we're not allowed to do dynamic scoring, anticipating how people would react. But, I mean, that doesn't come in the revenue estimate. But I can imagine that people would sit down and say, you know what, we should probably become an S-Corp so that we can get those favorable tax rates. And I would find that concerning. It's not that people don't take into account their tax structure when they're making a business organization discussion, having that and making that decision, but I don't think we want them to say that's the only thing that matters to us. And I would wonder whether this kind of business tax relief would result in that. Just a question, not anything more than that. Okay, who's next?
Next, Madam Chair. Thank you. My name is Jennifer Schaubach. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We are a labor organization made up of more than 1,000 affiliated unions representing more than 300,000 working people throughout the state. And I'm here today to testify in opposition to Senate File 102. The bill would reverse our recent progress in making our tax system less regressive. Thanks to tax bills passed in 2013 and 14, the distribution of state and local taxes in Minnesota is now fairer across all income levels. The share of income that the highest income Minnesotans pay in state and local taxes has gotten closer to what low and middle income Minnesotans pay, although it is still lower than average. This proposal only benefits a small number of businesses or business owners with high incomes, cutting taxes for only about 4,300 Minnesota taxpayers, all of which have taxable incomes high enough to be in the fourth tier. I'm not going to repeat what Nan said about it being unfair that a business owner could actually have a lower tax rate than their employee. This legislation reopens the gap between high-income Minnesotans and everyone else in terms of the share of income they pay in state and local taxes. And while we appreciate Senator Bonhoeff's amendment, which reduces the overall impact on our budget, it is still significant, and we are still at a crucial time in our economy where we need to be making investments in transportation and education, and this is not we feel that this just goes backwards. So.
Thank you, Ms. Schaubach. Mr. Adams.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tim Adams from AFSCME Council 5, and on behalf of the 43,000 members of AFSCME from around the state of Minnesota, we too are here this morning to oppose this legislation. AFSCME was very supportive of the work you all did last biennium to put Minnesota on sounder fiscal ground, very appreciative of that. And you ended years of deficits and disinvestments in Minnesota. You also allowed for some investments last session, and there are so many more exciting investments this session that we are very supportive. And we believe that this legislation, which would benefit a very few, jeopardizes those investments for the very, very many. So we are here to oppose the bill, and thank you for your time.
Are there any comments or questions for these three witnesses? Seeing none, we thank you also for being with us this morning. Senator Bonnet, before we take a motion to lay your bill over as amended for further consideration, would you like to make a closing comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for the discussion this morning. I appreciate your consideration. And just in summary, why I support this proposal is because I do not look at this proposal as giving business owners tax relief. I look at this proposal as perhaps providing business owners one more tool to make sure that they can continue to thrive and hire and grow our Minnesota economy, and so that we can, in fact, continue to compete on the global playing field. While there are always priorities and values and choices to be made, I believe an unintended consequence of the tax change that happened last session was an impact on our small businesses, putting them at a disadvantage to the big corporations.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff, for bringing this bill before us. There being no further testimony, Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 102, as amended, be laid over for further consideration on the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. The next two bills, or the next three bills that we have before us, deal with the small business investment income tax credit. Senator Senjum and Senator Gazelka has two bills, so we'll take those together, those three bills together, and invite the two senators to come before us, and then we'll take the test then after they have presented their bills. And I believe there are we have a couple of amendments to consider, author's amendments. Then we will take the testimony. We'll start with Senator Senjum, welcome back to the division. Senate File 119, and Senator Senjum has an author's amendment. Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment. We'll wait until everyone has that, but it is an author's amendment. Where'd he go? Senator Dietzick moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So we now have the Senate File 119 as amended by the A1 amendment, and the revenue estimate is drawn to the A1 amendment. So just want to point that out to members. Senator Senjum, please explain your bill, and then we'll move on to Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 119 is, frankly, a rather simple bill, at least in terms of language and in intent, I think fairly understandable. This is about the Small Business Investment Tax Credit, otherwise known as the Angel Investment Tax Credit. It's something that's been before this committee for some number of years, and so hopefully to some degree people are familiar with it. Madam Chair and members, this bill modifies the Small Business Investment Tax Credit total amount from $15 million to $17 million per biennium. Of this amount, $8.5 million then would be allotted or must be allotted to Greater Minnesota or women or minority-owned businesses on a preferential basis. Those credits aren't allocated in that direction, they would be made available to, if you will, the pool to everyone and across Minnesota on a first-come, first-served basis. So, Madam Chair, this is a very popular thing. I'm not sure if we're going to have testimony from Deed or not. I didn't arrange that. I do have a note from them. This money previously, the $15 million in the previous year, went very quickly. It's a very attractive program and sought out and utilized, I think, for the benefit of Minnesota's small businesses in their growth pattern.
Senator Senjum, the currently the dollars that are available to Greater Minnesota investors, if they're not used, I mean, the law says if they're not used, then they go into the pool that's available for investors outside of Greater Minnesota. And have all of those dollars been used in Greater Minnesota, or have some of them slipped back into the metro area? Could you give us that information if you have it before you?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if Mr. Jeff Nelson's in the audience or not. He could speak more specifically to this. I do have a note from him. It doesn't necessarily get to your question,
you
except
understand
that
what
it
I'm,
says
I'm
all
saying.
Of this money has been utilized
looking for
rather
the history
quickly.
Of it, or maybe
it okay.
Maybe Ms. Pollack could help us out there, and then I'll call on you, sir.
Actually, Madam Chair, as to the question of whether the $7.5 million that must be allocated to Greater Minnesota was not allocated and thus went back into the general pool and has been used up, I don't know, but I think Mr. Nelson could speak to that.
Mr. Nelson, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record, if you could respond to my question, I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, Jeff Nelson. I manage the Angel Tax Credit Program for the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Okay, and can you bring the microphone a little bit closer Certainly. To you? Thank you, and speak up.
2015 is the first year that the program has the carve-out for Greater Minnesota women-owned and minority-owned businesses.
2016, did you say?
The program runs on a calendar year basis, so this year, 2015, is the first year we have the carve-out. So we have no history.
You have no history. Okay.
I can tell you the current status if you're interested.
That would be helpful.
For 2015, again, the program started in January 1. The $7.5 million that was carved out for Greater Minnesota women-owned and minority-owned businesses, $5.9 million remains.
And so the time period then extends to?
That money will remain carved out for those types of businesses until September 30th, at which point it will be available for.
So it's very likely that all of it will be spoken for. Wouldn't you say?
Probably.
Yeah, in the next 5 or 6 months. Just so we know that that our original policy decision with regard to where it would be available seems to fit the general economy that we're talking about in Greater Minnesota and the rest of the state.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Questions or comments? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nelson, what's the status of the overall program?
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, $7.5 million is carved out for those three types of businesses. We have $8.5 million in the general pot. Of that $8.5 million, $5 million currently remains.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions about the pot itself? Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Senator Senjum, do you have any further comments directly about your bill? If not, we'll move on to
Madam Chair, it's just an increase in allocation.
Okay. We'll come back to adopting your bill as amended and laying it over after we've heard the testimony on all three bills. And Senator Gazelka, now we will move to you for Senate File 185. Do you need any amendments for that bill?
Madam Chair, no, I do not on that one.
Then Senator Gazelka, would you explain Senate File 185?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, same angel investment credit on that one. We are simply ending the sunset provision so that it's on an ongoing basis, and I have mixed feelings about that, but it's just one of those programs I'd rather have us come back and say we want to end it rather than have to come back every year. And so that's really all that Senate File 185 makes as a change.
And so, members, you'll see that on the revenue estimate then for this bill, there's no impact for this biennium. The impact is an increase in the costs for the next biennium of $15 million a year, which would continue the program as you have it in this bill without any change in the allocation. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Any questions about Senate File 185? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, a comment about, we made changes to the people that can qualify for the credit last year. We do get a study report back, and we're having some discussion about whether that's annual or when exactly we're going to get that. But I think it would be helpful to see what the report says as we contemplate both of these.
Senator Skoy, who's doing that report?
I think it's DOR, but I'm not sure. We're having some conversations right now about exactly who does it.
Mr. Nelson, do you know who's doing that report? If you'd come back to the table, please. Are
Madam
you
Chair,
aware of this request for report and who is conducting the study or the analysis, Mr. Nelson?
Madam Chair, and Senator Skoy, I'm not familiar with that report or request for it. I know that we do.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll find out and let the members know and so forth. Let's hope it's sometime soon.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I think it's particularly interesting this next report after we made the changes to see
yes.
what the impact was.
Yes, in terms of, what all the, who's eligible and the, what did we call those things to make sure that there was no, that people were legitimately using it so that it wasn't, the gaming, anti-gaming provision, so that people were not able to game it. Thank you, Ms. Schaefer-Pellinen. Okay, then, Senator Gazelka, you want to?
Madam Chair,
Senator Senjum first, and then we'll go on to Senate File 186. Senator Senjum.
Just as a matter of general information, is that report scheduled for this
we don't know.
Session?
We're okay. We definitely will bring it up, and we need to find out where at what stage it is. Senator Skoy, do you know anything further at this point?
Madam Chair, we don't know, but as soon as we know, we'll get
we'll
the information to the committee members and to you guys.
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair, it looks like there's a report due to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees having jurisdiction over taxes and economic development on the small business investment program, and it's looks like it's due March 15th by the Commissioner of Revenue.
Senator Senjum, I think that answers the question, and certainly that will be timely with regard to putting together the omnibus bill if we think that there need to be changes in eligibility or this or that or the other thing. So, okay. Senator Gazelka, Senate File 186.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do have a oral amendment for this to put a dollar number in on line 1.12.
Senator Gazelka moves with regard to Senate File 186, the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment.
Thank you.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the Gazelka A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Gazelka, Senate File 186 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This simply increases the dollar amount of credits that would qualify, and it's in light of the fact that we are using them quickly. I think the testifiers will make the case that they are worthwhile, that they are having a positive impact, and this simply increases the number from where we are right now.
Okay, any discussion? And if not, we'll hear from the testifiers and ask them to come forward now. Ms. Plumador, would you like to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Genevieve Plumador here representing Life Science Alley.
And then we have Mr. Dukic from the High Tech Association. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Ms. Plumador.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am here in support of all three of the bills presented to you today. As you know, Minnesota is one of the most highly concentrated medical hubs here in the country. We employ 48,000 Minnesotans directly and 120,000 in indirect jobs as well. Minnesota took very important steps to improve the climate for growth for our small life science companies by passing the Angel Investment Credit into law. It's been a very highly successful economic development tool for the state and has leveraged significant investments in the state. As you know, the pathway to profitability for our companies can be taxing. It takes about 7 to 10 years for clinical trial process and FDA processes for our companies to become profitable and have a product to market. To put the capital requirements in perspective, a company of my members, it takes them about $100 million in initial investments, and again, 7 to 10 years, again, before they are profitable. This year, Life Science Alley published a study that showed there was a hike in investments here in the state in early stage development. We rose those investments for about 65% from 2013. So we had a significant amount of investments. And we surveyed the companies specifically, and time again, we kept hearing from a lot of the startups that the Angel Investment Tax Credit was part of the reason that they had such a significant explosion in growth. So in closing, the Angel Investment Tax Credit reduces the risk to the investors, many of whom are not venture capitalists. Repealing the sunset and increasing the amount of the credit will continue Minnesota's legacy of entrepreneurship and innovation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Plumador. Questions for Ms. Plumador? And not seeing none, Mr. Dukic, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic. I manage public policy and entrepreneurship for the Minnesota High Tech Association. We represent more than 300 science and technology companies from across the state with the goal of helping Minnesota become a top five technology state. We are hoping to have an entrepreneur and an investor here to share their story with you today, but unfortunately they were unable to make it. I don't want to repeat what Genevieve has said or what the authors have said, but we are here to support the bills in front of you as a way to encourage investment in our entrepreneurial companies and promote innovation in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Dukic. We appreciate your testimony on behalf of the individuals. Is there further comments or questions for either the testifiers or Senator Gazelka or Senator Senjum at this point? Senator Skor.
At some point, I have a question for Mr. Nelson. Ms. McQuay has brought to my attention that there was a requirement in the law last year that they promote the the carve out, and I was wondering what the department was doing there at some point.
Mr. Nelson, if you join us, thank you. Mr. Nelson, did you hear Senator Skoy's question? He wants to know what the department has been doing. Who's charged with promoting the opportunity for eligible taxpayers? Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, our department's report to the legislature on the Angel Tax Credit Program will be provided by March 15th. In that report, we will be outlining the promotion plan that we put forth. Basically, there was four different elements of that plan.
Could you speak up, please?
Yes, sorry. I think this microphone isn't quite as loud as the other ones. We have a four-point plan that we've used to promote the Angel Tax Credit Program to Greater Minnesota, to women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses. That included an email campaign to various service providers so that they would be aware of the program and could communicate it to their clients. We did an advertising campaign both in Greater Minnesota and within the metro area to reach women and minorities. I've done personal outreach to about 30 different groups that represent various constituencies in Greater Minnesota, as well as groups that represent women and minorities. And the department plans in the spring to do an outreach sort of field trip visiting various communities throughout the state to make them aware of both this program and other programs that we have available that benefit Greater Minnesota.
Thank you.
Okay. So it looks like we'll be getting both of those reports about the same time, which would we'll have another discussion and Ms. Plumenora, Mr. Dukic, we invite you back at that time as well and make sure you know about it. Both, I guess, March 15th reports are going to be, no, Senator, Ms. Pollack, why don't you tell me what that note says?
Madam Chair and members, I just wanted to correct myself. The March 15th report that I mentioned, I incorrectly stated that it was the Commissioner of Revenue that was required to submit that report. It's the Commissioner of Deed.
Of Deed.
Yes. Okay.
Anything else? Seeing none, Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 119 as amended be laid over for further consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 185 be laid over for further consideration on the omnibus tax bill. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 186 as amended be laid over for further consideration for the omnibus tax bill. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. that concludes the business except for the adoption of the minutes from the February 11th meeting of the division. Senator Thompson moves adoption of the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment, the minutes are approved. The schedule for next week, the division will not be meeting. Senator Skoy, will the full committee be meeting?
I believe so, but I have to look at Donovan or Chris for the date.
It's a mess.
They're not here. We will be meeting next week, but we'll post.
We'll be sending out notice, but the division itself will not be meeting. We'll only be meeting,
Madam Chair,
in the full committee. Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, I believe we're meeting on Monday. I think we're doing the online gaming bill on Monday morning.
Monday morning in the full committee.
Yes.
Any further business before the committee? Seeing none, we stand adjourned.